Money and Marriage God's Way, Chapter 4, The Compass Money Map, Part 2.
Before we tackle Destination 2 on the Compass Money Map, let's look at what God says about debt. Because, you know, it's one of the biggest causes of financial tension and conflict in a marriage. I'll never forget the time I talked to Richard Harris. He told me, I didn't realize how much stress we were under till we paid off all of our debts. Then Melissa and I walked to the mailbox, and we experienced such a sense of freedom, one we hadn't felt in years. We knew we weren't going to receive any more of those nasty late payment letters. You know, God realizes that debt can damage a marriage, and His view of it is really clear. Romans 13:8 tells us, let no debt remain outstanding and owe nothing to anyone. And in Proverbs 22:7, we learn one of the reasons that God speaks so strongly against debt. The borrower is servant to the lender. When you go into debt, you place yourself in bondage to the lender. The deeper in debt, the more bondage. Slavery to debt is not what your heavenly Father wants for your marriage. You know, in the Old Testament, being out of debt was one of the promised rewards for obedience. I love what Deuteronomy 28 tells us. If you will diligently obey the Lord your God, being careful to do all of His commandments, all these blessings shall come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord. You shall lend to many nations, but you shall not borrow. However, debt was one of the curses for disobedience. Again, from Deuteronomy 28, if you will not obey the Lord your God, all these curses shall come upon you. The alien who is among you shall rise above you higher and higher, but you shall go down lower and lower. He shall lend to you, but you shall not lend to him. Now, you may be thinking, I'm just too far in debt to ever get out. That's simply not true. No matter what your situation, God wants you to be free. So let's explore Destination 2 on the map, and that's where you're going to increase your emergency savings to 1 month's living expense, and you're going to pay off the plastic. So here's what I suggest that you do with your monthly surplus. Add half of it to your emergency savings and half of it to pay off that credit card debt. Now, once you've accumulated 1 month of living expenses in your emergency account, stop adding to the savings and apply the entire surplus to pay off that plastic. But if you paid off your credit cards first, add the entire surplus to your emergency savings. Let me ask you a question. Did you know that the average household with an unpaid balance has more than $9,000 in credit card debt? There's been an explosion in the number of credit cards, and for only one reason. The credit card companies make a ton of money charging interest. The more you owe, the more interest they receive, the more likely they could whack you with those late fees and over-the-limit penalties. The key to get out of debt is to snowball it. And here's how. In addition to making the minimum payments on all your credit cards, focus on paying the one with the smallest balance first. Now, the reason I don't recommend paying off the card with the highest interest rate first is simple. Getting out of debt is just plain hard. We all need to be encouraged by seeing the balance go down. Now, after the first credit card's paid off, apply its payment toward the one with the next smallest balance. And after the second card's paid off, apply what you were paying on the first and second toward the third smallest. That's the snowball in action. And every time you pay one off, don't forget to celebrate as a couple. Bev and I started with 9 credit cards. Today we carry 2 that we pay in full each month. We also opted out of receiving credit card offers by mail and those telemarketing calls. To stop junk mail, call toll-free at 888-5-OPT-OUT. That's 888-5-OPT-OUT. Log on to the website of the National Do Not Call Registry at ftc.gov/do-not-call. ftc.gov/do-not-call, and that'll stop those telemarketers. Evening time will be so much more peaceful without answering those irritating calls. You know, there's a lot of competition among credit card companies for your business, especially if you have a solid credit score. And if your company is charging you a really high rate of interest, phone them. Ask them to drop it. Another alternative is to transfer the balance to a card that charges less interest. But remember, if you miss even one payment or you're a day late, your interest rate's going to skyrocket over 20% in most cases. Well, once you've finished Destination 2, it's on to Destination 3. There, you're going to add to your emergency savings until you have 3 months of living expenses set aside. And you're also going to focus on paying off your consumer loans. And one of the most common is auto debt. 70% of all cars are financed, and many people never get out of car debt. But fortunately, there's a way to get out of car debt for good by following three pretty simple steps. First, decide to keep your car for at least 3 years longer than your car loan, then pay off the loan. The second step is, after your last payment, keep making the payment, but to yourself. That's really the key. Put it into an account that you're going to use to buy your next car. And third, to replace your car, the cash you save plus your trade-in should be sufficient to buy a car without using debt. Now, it may not be a new car, but a low-mileage used car is a much better value anyhow because of one word. And what's that word? Depreciation. You know, the moment you drive a car off the lot, it's worth less than you paid for it. And depreciation is why so many car buyers are upside down on their auto loans. They owe more than the car is worth. So here's my advice. Keep your car as long as they're safe to drive. Buy low-mileage used cars to avoid new car depreciation. And if you're like Bev and me, we just drove our cars till the wheels fell off. Now, another common type of debt is student loans. The average college senior graduates with about, listen to this, $20,000 in student loans. Student loans come from two sources, the government and private lenders. The government subsidizes its loans at lower interest rates because it wants to encourage college attendance. Now, if you have more than one school loan, consolidating them may be a good option to reduce your interest rate. And the government has a great website. It's loanconsolidation.ed.gov. That's loanconsolidation.ed, which stands for education.gov. And it allows you to apply for student loan consolidation directly over the internet. However, if you're unable to consolidate, simply come out and use the snowball method of paying them off. Make all the minimum monthly payments and knock out one with the smallest balance first. After that one's paid off, apply its payment to the one with the second smallest balance. That's the snowball in action. Now let's take a look at home equity loans, which are simply additional mortgages. They use the equity in your home as the collateral to secure a loan. Now, there are two main ways to tap into your home equity: through a home equity loan, that's a second mortgage, or a home equity line of credit. Home equity loans are attractive because lenders often charge a lower interest rate, and tax-deductible interest, well, that's simply another carrot that lenders use to entice homeowners into using home equity loans. Here's what's important. Understand the risks. You know, if you can't pay a credit card bill, the issuer can take you to court and sue for recovery. With a home equity loan, however, they can take your home. Then there's a home equity line of credit, or HELOC, as they're sometimes called. Think of these as a giant credit card the size of your house. You can borrow whenever you want, as much as you want, up to the credit limit. Your monthly payments are based solely on the amount that you borrow. The advantages of a HELOC are similar to a home equity loan: lower interest rates, tax-deductible interest, and lower closing costs than with refinancing a mortgage. The major downside is that it could be a huge temptation. It's just like this credit card. Remember, the credit card the size of your house, the tendency is to use it too often. My advice, don't ever use them. Well, let me talk about how to deal with creditors. Many couples try to avoid their creditors, but you know, that's just not smart. Most creditors want to hear from you. They're often willing to work out a plan for you to repay, but it's almost impossible. Let me say it again. It's almost impossible to negotiate with a creditor that you've ignored. Silence is deadly. So run toward your creditors, not away from them. As hard as it may be, always take the initiative in keeping your creditors informed. There are three simple rules to follow when dealing with these creditors. First, communicate with them. You make the call. Instead of waiting for them to get in touch with you, you make the call. And then offer lenders a written copy of your budget, your debts, and your debt repayment schedule. Give them the facts that will help them make an informed decision. And the third step, and this is just huge, always be completely honest with your creditors. Let's face it, often we need the Lord to intervene when we're trying to get out of debt. And when we're faithful, when we're people of integrity, that gives God real freedom to work in the hearts of our creditors. Fred and Marie Bailey had two debts that had been turned over to collections. And as often happens, the collection agency became abusive. They called Marie almost every day at work and threatened to garnish her wages. She was an emotional wreck. Husbands, you need to take leadership in dealing with creditors and protect your wives. 1 Peter 3, verse 7 tells us, "Husbands, be considerate as you live with your wives and treat them with respect as the weaker partner, so that nothing will hinder your prayers." You know, when Peter says the wife is a weaker partner, I believe he's simply saying she is more emotionally sensitive. So men, step up to the plate. Protect your wives. And fortunately, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, boy, is that a mouthful, is designed to protect consumers by limiting what a debt collector can do. Collectors are prohibited from harassing, lying, or threatening you. You can report any problem with a debt collector to your state attorney general's office. And now let's talk about consolidating loans. In theory, consolidating a number of high interest rate loans to one lower interest rate loan makes a lot of sense. Consolidated loans often offer a lower monthly payment, and making just one payment instead of a bunch is certainly much simpler. However, there's one huge downside in consolidating your loans. If you haven't solved the problems that put you into debt in the first place, you're going to end up worse off. Surveys discovered that about two-thirds of those who borrow against their home equity to pay off plastic run up more credit card debt within just 2 years. So couples shouldn't consolidate until they've changed their habits. Do yourself a favor. Hate debt. Start paying it off, spend less than you earn, then consolidate your loans. Now let's examine the credit report and credit scores. Your credit score, that's the FICO score, determines whether you can get credit, and your score may be high enough to get credit, but not high enough to get a decent interest rate. You know, without good scores, your application to rent an apartment can be turned down. Scores can affect car insurance premiums and even whether you can get a job. Now, both the husband and wife have separate credit scores. And often only the husband has credit in his name and his wife doesn't establish good credit. Now, that's a mistake. If a husband dies before his wife, she won't have a good, solid credit score. The way Bev and I solved this problem was by each securing a credit card in our name that we pay on time, in full, every month. Now, when we receive the credit card statements, we review them together so our communication remains intact. But what exactly is a credit score? It's a number designed to help lenders measure the likelihood of you making payments on time. The FICO score ranges from 300 to 850, with average score about 680. The higher the scores, the better. FICO scores above 700 indicate a good credit risk. Scores below 600 indicate a poor risk. A low score could lead to a much higher interest rate. Let me give you an example. You could pay as much as 3% more on a 30-year home mortgage if your credit score is too low. On a $200,000 mortgage, that 3% difference could cost you about $400 a month. The primary things that are going to harm your credit score are late payments or non-payments of bills or debts, bankruptcy, foreclosure, repossession, bills or loans that are sent to collection. To improve your score, the two most important things you can do are to pay your bills on time and to reduce your total debt. Once you start doing this, your score will begin to improve in about 3 months. Now, your credit report is important because that's what determines your score. And I love this. You could order a free copy of your credit score once every 12 months simply by logging on to annualcreditreport.com. Let me say that again because there's a lot of websites that sound like this one. Annualcreditreport.com. Review it. Make sure there's no mistakes or you haven't been a victim of identity theft. Everyone, and I mean everyone, needs to do this once a year. The free copy of your credit report doesn't contain your credit score. Any one of the three main credit agencies, Equifax, Experian, or TransUnion, will sell you the score. Now, let's talk about something that's risky business, co-signing. Anytime you co-sign, you become legally responsible for the debt of another. I love what Proverbs 17:18 says. It is poor judgment to co-sign another's note to become responsible for his debts. The professional lender has decided, this loan is so risky that unless I can find somebody who has good credit to guarantee it, I'm not going to do it. So please, never, ever co-sign a loan. You know, I believe that parents shouldn't co-sign for their children. By not co-signing, you model for your children that co-signing and debt should be avoided. Parents often co-sign for their children's first car, and Bev and I decided, let's not do this. Instead, we encourage them to save for its purchase by matching a portion of what they saved. Now you've reached Destination 4, and this is really exciting because you've turned the corner. You've paid off all your plastic, auto debt, and other consumer debts. All that money that was going to debt payments is now available for saving for major purchases. Now, the biggest major purchases are the home, education for the kids, funding for retirement, and money to start a business if you feel the Lord wants you to do that. So here's what to do. As a couple, estimate how much you can save each month for the major purchases. Then prioritize them by deciding what percentage of your saving are you going to apply to each purchase. For example, you might apply 50% of your savings for the purchase of your home, 25% for retirement, and so forth. Now, I want to make a really strong recommendation about your retirement savings. If your employer matches your 401k contributions, contribute up to the maximum of the match. If your employer matches 3%, contribute 3% because it's free money. You, right out of the box, you've made 100% on your money, but don't contribute one penny more than your employer matches in your 401k. Instead, invest it in a Roth IRA, a Roth individual retirement account. I am a huge fan of the Roth. Although you don't get a tax deduction for your contribution, the beauty of it is it grows tax-free. And then when you reach age 59 and a half, you can take it out tax-free. And this is going to be a huge benefit in the future because I promise you tax rates in the future will be much higher to fund government deficits. Now, at Destination 5, you're going to buy your home, begin paying it off, and also begin investing. Now, there are two basic rules of thumb for buying an affordable home. First, listen carefully. Put a minimum of 20% as a down payment for the purchase of your home. This eliminates the need for expensive PMI insurance, which doesn't benefit you at all. And forget adjustable rate mortgages. Get one that's fixed. If you don't have enough saved for the 20% down payment, renting is usually a much cheaper option than owning anyhow. So rent and save like crazy. The second rule of thumb is, no more than 40% of your income should be spent for all housing expenses. That includes mortgage payments, insurance, real estate taxes, utilities, and maintenance. What we've discovered, if housing costs exceed 40%, you're going to need to rob money from other spending categories just to balance the budget. Well, when Bev and I first learned God's financial principles as a young married couple, we became convinced that the Lord wanted us to be entirely out of debt, even to include our home. Now, we understood This was going to be a really long-term goal because of the size of the mortgage. But we realized if we could pay it off, it would free up a huge chunk of our income so we could give more generously and save much more aggressively. So we started by paying an extra amount of money each month to reduce the principal more quickly. The longer we did it, the more excited we became. Finally, we also started applying work bonuses, income tax refunds to our mortgage. I mean, anything that we could. Prepaying your mortgage can save you tons of interest. I want to encourage you. Log on to our website, compassone.org. That's compassone.org. Click on resources, then calculators. And there you can learn just how much interest you can save by paying extra toward the principal each month. Now, once you've decided to pay off your home, let your lender know so they can tell you how you can get the proper credit for your repayment. Now, some homeowners don't want to prepay the mortgage because interest is one of their tax deductions. But listen, this tax deduction is overrated. It's a blessing, but it's overrated. If you're in the 25% tax bracket for each $1,000 you pay in home mortgage interest, you only save $250 in taxes, 25% of the $1,000 in interest you paid. So while it's a benefit, it's not much as many think. I mean, paying $1,000 to save $250, well, it's not that great of a deal. And as Bev and I discovered, paying off our home mortgage was a key step on the journey to true financial freedom. Well, let's shift gears and take a look at spending. You know, it's virtually impossible to make real progress on your journey on the Compass Money Map if your spending's out of control. What a couple spends on their lifestyle can have a massive impact on their finances and on their relationship. It's so crucial for couples to agree upon the lifestyle that they sense that God wants for them, one that is affordable and enables them to achieve their long-term goals together. One of the single biggest obstacles to reaching unity in lifestyle is the power of advertising. All of it targeted at getting us to spend more. Whether the product is cars, clothing, even deodorants, the message is that the happy, sexy, wrinkle-free life can be ours only if we're willing to buy it. And if we can't afford it, no problem, charge it. Advertisers are pros. They're professionals at creating discontentment. 5 of the 6 times the word contentment appears in the Bible, it involves money. In Philippians 4, the Apostle Paul said, "I have learned to be content. Whatever the circumstances, I know what it is to be in need, and I know what it is to have plenty. I've learned the secret of being content in any and every circumstance, whether well-fed or hungry, whether living in plenty or in want. I can do all things through Christ who gives me strength." Oh, and by the way, Paul wrote those words from prison, in chains. Fact is, no one's born with the instinct of contentment. It's something we have to learn. Someone said it this way, "If you're not content with what you have, you'll never be content with what you want." You know, early in our marriage, Bev and I realized if we were going to reach our goals, we needed to control spending. We needed to be content with the same lifestyle in spite of our shop-till-you-drop culture. We decided that the short-term sacrifices, well, they were just unimportant compared to reaching true financial freedom. So we ask ourselves these questions about our spending. Can we make lifestyle decisions that will reduce our spending? Do we need this item? If we need it, can we get it less expensively? So I want to challenge you as a couple. Ask the same questions about your spending. The objective is to reduce your spending so you can create more surplus each month. And that gives you the ability to give more, pay off debt more quickly, and save more. Now, let me share some of our key decisions. First, instead of moving on up to a larger home, we decided our modest starter home would be our finisher home. And we lived in that home for 29 years until we moved out of state. We paid off the mortgage as quickly as possible, and that eliminated our biggest monthly expense, the house payment. So I want you just to dream with me. How would you feel? Just how would you feel if you owned your home free and clear? Well, we came to the same conclusion. It feels really good. We loved it. Then we chose to buy only used car for cash and drive them till the wheels fell off. Bev drove the same car for 17 years. Yes, you heard me right. 17 years. We used to call it puff because of the puff of smoke that came out of the exhaust pipe whenever she accelerated. I once bought a truck that cost $100. I'll have to tell you the truth. It looked like it cost $100. We had a neighbor, she felt sorry for me, I think, borrowed it and brought it back painted. I mean, it looked like a $200 truck. Well, while driving that $100 truck one morning, I was just enjoying a very special time of worshiping the Lord, exalting Christ in my life. And I remember Psalm 16:11, which says, "In the presence of the Lord is fullness of joy." You know, it didn't matter whether I was driving that $100 truck or the most expensive car on the market. I could experience fullness of joy simply because of my relationship with Jesus Christ. You know, we've been told a lie that says our deepest needs can be satisfied only by buying the newest and the best, and nothing could be further from the truth. Well, it's also hard to overestimate the financial impact of driving debt-free cars. Listen to this. The average monthly new car payment is about $400. If a young 21-year-old married couple drives debt-free cars and saves that $400 a month, and they earn just an average return, they'll accumulate about, get this, $4 million by age 65. Short-term spending sacrifices translate into enormous long-term benefits. Now, comparing your lifestyle with others often leads to terrible financial decisions. So many couples have suffered by trying to keep up with the Joneses, whether they could afford it or not. Young couples are especially susceptible because they want to begin with the same lifestyle that it took their parents years to build. They buy homes, cars, clothing that are just too expensive for them. Some want to create an affluent facade to impress others. Don't fall into this trap. Author George Fouché observed, "People buy things they do not need with money they do not have to impress people they do not even like." In Luke 12:15, Jesus taught, "For not even when one has an abundance does his life consist of his possessions." Think of your possessions simply as tools. Tools to help you accomplish what God wants you to do for Him. He's entrusted you with assets that He intends you to use for His purposes. Early in our marriage, I focused on spending what I wanted. I didn't really even consider Bev's desires. I didn't understand that Philippians 2, 3, and 4 applied to me, our marriage. Here's what it says. "Do nothing out of selfishness or empty conceit, but in humility of mind, consider others better than yourselves. Each of you should look not only after your own interest, but also the interest of others." Well, as I've grown in my relationship with Christ, I've completely changed. The question I now ask is, what can I do with our finances to be a blessing to my wife? Fortunately, Bev asked a similar question. How can my spending be a blessing to my husband? God's called all of us to bless each other. And as you develop this mentality of wanting to bless your mate, what you'll discover is you actually enjoy buying something for him or her much more than yourself. It's the application of what Jesus told us in Acts 20:35. Listen to this. "It is more blessed to give than to receive."